Michelangelo de Lodovico Buonarroti Simoni may be one of the world's most famous artists, but few people know much about the incredible range of his interests and accomplishments beyond his statues of David and the Pietà and his great frescoes at the Sistine Chapel. This past Tuesday, an exhibit called Michelangelo, the Man and the Myth opened at the Palace Gallery on East 61st Street, and it features 14 works by Michelangelo, 8 of which have never been shown in the United States until now. The show, which was created under the sponsorship of Syracuse University's Art Galleries, runs until January 4th. And joining me now is Gary Ratke, scholarly advisor to the exhibition and a professor of fine arts at Syracuse University. Welcome to our show.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Has Michelangelo been something of a historic mystery despite all of his fame?
I think he has been somewhat of a mystery because people get fixed on the Michelangelo either of the Agony and the Ecstasy, this extraordinarily emotional man who's constantly fighting with his patrons, or they get looking at the Sistine Chapel and David, and they assume this must be all. But we have a poet, we have an engineer, we've got a man with a lot of other things.
Well, I would assume that people who live in Italy are more aware of it, because when you're walking through Rome, you can't help but accidentally wind up in one of the churches that he designed. And, of course, there's a whole museum devoted to him in Florence.
Right. Well, I think Italians have a very good sense of Michelangelo as the man who did these works of art. But what's a surprise to them, and I think to our visitors in the Syracuse University Palace Gallery, is that he was also a poet, a great wordsmith. And we have many examples of his writing in this exhibition, as well as examples of the art.
Would he have been known as a poet during his lifetime?
During his lifetime, he was already famous as a poet. Benedetto Varchi, one of the great scholars at the Florentine Academy, gave a famous lecture about Michelangelo's poetry while he was still alive. And Michelangelo shared his poetry with his best friends. It was a matter of how he communicated, how he both expressed himself, but the way in which he worked with others.
Well, how much do we learn about Michelangelo through his poetry? I know there's conjecture about his sexuality based on the poetry, but nothing is explicit, is it?
Oh, no, it's very explicit. In fact, in his poetry, there's a series of sonnets and madrigals that are openly addressed to Tommaso Cavalieri. It's clear that he's speaking to a man. He's talking about his yearning. He's talking about the difficulties that he has in expressing his love and the way in which he is just tortured by his relationship. So it's... In fact, in his own day, it was problematic in that it was illegal to be known as a homosexual. And the very first editions of his poetry, actually all the pronouns were changed so that these poems were supposedly addressed to women.
It is odd that the two greatest artists of that time, Michelangelo and Leonardo, were both gay.
I don't think odd. I think it's quite
well,
remarkably
wonderful.
Well, I mean,
odd that because, only because they both had to be closeted and they were rivals.
Yes, yes. And in fact, I think their rivalry is a really important story about Michelangelo the man. That Leonardo is 23 years older. He goes off to Milan and is having a great career with the Sforzas, and he comes back to Florence, and there's this other young man who is, in a sense, usurping his place, and they end up doing a lot of competition with one another.
Although their pursuits were quite different, because Michelangelo was primarily a sculptor in his head. Leonardo actually wrote a piece, I remember, in art history. He wrote an essay in which he said that painting was the highest art because you could do it in your velvets.
Yes, and indeed. But that, I think, has to do with Michelangelo and Leonardo sort of stalking out their own place in the Renaissance world, because Leonardo was, in his own day, before the David, as famous as a sculptor as he was a painter. He had this enormous project for an over-life-size bronze equestrian monument.
Which never got made.
It did not get made. It got made in clay, but not cast. And I think when he wrote those notes about painting and said that painting was so superior to sculpture, it was in a certain way an admission of defeat, but it was also a staking out of a territory that would be unique to him.
Now, Michelangelo was really famous during his lifetime, and two biographies of him were published while he was still alive. Does that mean we know a lot about his life?
We know a great deal about his life, partly because he was so busy shaping how that story was told. When Giorgio Vasari first wrote that biography, Michelangelo was alive. He was able to talk to the artist, that is, Vasari was. But Michelangelo also, we have hundreds of letters that still survive in the Casa Buonarroti from which our exhibition comes.
Well, Vasari is notoriously famous for not being a good historian. His lives of the artists started all sorts of misinformation about the Renaissance. Was he better when he was dealing with Michelangelo?
He was both better and typically worse. He knew Michelangelo personally, but he adored Michelangelo, so there was a kind of adulation. But Michelangelo, the second biography, was in fact commissioned by Michelangelo himself to correct some of the mistakes that Vasari made. And then Vasari, very cleverly, in the second edition of the Lives, made sure that that information was incorporated into this very praising biography.
So Michelangelo was pretty much controlling his own image. He did the same with portraits of himself. He did some self-portraits, but there aren't too many other paintings of him by other artists, although there is one in this exhibit, a very famous painting by Marcello Venusti. I think this is the only reason I've ever heard of that artist.
That's true. Marcello is an artist who made copies after many other artists' work, but to have a portrait of Michelangelo means that we're looking at the self-fashioned Michelangelo to begin with. There's no portraits really of him from earlier in his life. He thought portraiture was inferior to the other arts, and he consciously shaped his biography and the portrait of him by burning his drawings, destroying his works. What's so rare about this exhibition that we have at the Syracuse Palitz Gallery is this possibility to see behind the scenes, to see the stuff that didn't get edited out by Michelangelo.
We also have works by other artists, but let's talk about the Michelangelo pieces. Most of the 14 pieces on display are sketches and drawings.
That's correct.
What do they tell us about Michelangelo that we might not have known otherwise?
What they tell us about Michelangelo is, unlike the myth that Michelangelo himself promoted, that he saw everything fully formed in his head, that he had this ideal vision and he could just liberate it from a block of stone. It shows us that Michelangelo, like everybody, had to work hard to find that idea, to develop it. And so we see him quickly sketching and not knowing necessarily where the nudes for the Sistine Chapel are going to be positioned. In other examples, we see him in an architectural drawing, not quite sure, is he going to have a triangular pediment or a round-topped pediment? So what we see is the man being actively at work, and that very human activity of creating.
So these are all preparatory drawings. He didn't draw necessarily simply for the sheer joy of doing a beautiful drawing?
I don't think we have many drawings. In fact, I can't off the top of my head imagine a drawing that seems to be for his own pleasure. He has so many commissions, so many works that he has going concurrently, from the Julius tomb for Pope Julius II to architectural projects. And so in these, they're really his hard work. They range in quality from things that are the primi pensieri, the very first ideas, to some very finished works, like a lovely, lovely face of Leda, but they are not for his own enjoyment.
And you say that they reveal the way that he worked. Was his creative process all that different from the way other artists of the time worked?
I don't think so. I think he wanted us to think that his creative process was very different. But in terms of need to go from first sketch to more developed sketch to full-scale cartoon, for example, for the Sistine ceiling, all of that process is similar to what we have with other artists. What is unique, however, is that even after he did a full-scale finished drawing and he started carving or started painting, he would revise again. He would keep on creating. And I think that is different. Some other artists would get it all fixed, and then they would sort of copy it into their final work. Michelangelo is constantly revising.
And that happened during the painting of the Sistine Chapel as well?
Yes.
He improvising all the time?
He was improvising on the Sistine ceiling insofar as he had full-scale drawings that he put up against the wet plaster. We have the stylus marks where he traced them onto the wet plaster. And yet, when it was being restored and we were able to go up on the scaffolding, we could see that Michelangelo often painted outside of the lines. He often increased the size of a figure. He added color. He added form. He changed poses slightly as the moment inspired him.
We're talking about an exhibit at the Palitz Gallery, Palitz, on East 65th Street, called Michelangelo, the Man and the Myth. And it draws upon work from the Casa Buonarroti in Florence. It is organized by the Syracuse University Art Galleries. And my guest is Gary Ratke, who is a scholarly advisor to the exhibit and a professor of fine arts at Syracuse University. You talked about how Leonardo kind of downplayed sculpture because he was losing in the competition. We've often heard that Michelangelo didn't consider painting to be all that important. Was that as a result of the rivalry as well, or was it just that he loved doing the sculpture more?
I think he really did love doing the sculpture more. He famously signed the contract for the Sistine Chapel, Michelangelo Scultore, Michelangelo the sculptor. And when you look at all his works, we have some drawings, for example, of late architectural plans for churches where he's carving space in architecture as well. So I think Michelangelo does think of his primary art as that being the shaping of space rather than color and light and some of the things that painters more often do.
There was a big debate during the cleaning of the Sistine Chapel as to whether the cleaned version was what Michelangelo had actually intended or whether he had put some stuff over it to give it that,
a stony or some supposedly sculptural quality.
Now, the colors do look like the kinds of colors we associate with the great frescoes of the time. They're very bright. They're quite lovely. What's your feeling?
My feeling is that the restoration has brought back the vivid what I would call sculptural color, color that was used when you juxtapose bright green and bright yellow, you get an effect that is both visually satisfying as replicating some kind of fabric, but it also looks sculptural. And we look at all the other frescoes from this period and the Mannerist artists afterwards who are using pinks and turquoises and melons. Where does that come from? Right off the Sistine ceiling.
Well, everybody was influenced by him, everyone who followed. Mannerism comes out of Michelangelo.
Indeed.
You mentioned this this drawing, one of the key items in the exhibit, the head of Leda. Why is that piece considered so important?
It's so important because it gives us an insight both into Michelangelo's extraordinary ability to create beautiful women as well as men, a drawing for a painting that no longer survives and that is tenderly drawn with red chalk on a page, but also in some insight into his dealings with people who ordered paintings from him.
Well, I'd always heard in art school that he simply took men as models for women and put breasts on them.
Well, most artists in this period, of course, did not have access to female models, and so he did that. There's this famous sculpture, certainly in the Medici tombs, that of night that looks like that. But if you think of the face of the Pietà, and we have a full-size replica of the Pietà in our exhibition, if you think of the beautiful faces of the figures of the prophetesses, the younger ones on the Sistine ceiling, it's quite clear Michelangelo did have an aesthetic of female beauty. It was trumped frequently by his greater appreciation and more frequent representation of men, but I think one of the myths that we're dispelling in this exhibition with this drawing is that Michelangelo was only interested in the male body.
Now, there was a lot of turmoil in Italy at the time. The city-states were often fighting, and there were invading armies. Is that reflected in works of this sort?
It's reflected directly in these works. Michelangelo in 1527 was put in charge of the fortifications of the city of Florence, defending Florence against the Medici, who were trying to take over the entire government.
Wait, he was also supposed to do military work?
Yes, he was supposed to.
He's a military engineer on top of everything else?
Just like Leonardo, he is the true Renaissance man. He's doing literature and he's being an engineer in military work, and we have a drawing that's never been in the United States of a fortification that looks sort of like a crab that is there protecting in it with its great tentacles the great city of Florence.
Well, how do people even make allegiances at a time like this? Because you could have been born in one city, do work in another city, and move to Florence to establish yourself and then be called to Rome, as Michelangelo was. Was he patriotic to Florence? Was that his favorite?
He was extremely patriotic to Florence. He believed in the republican values of the city and supported the republic, but he was also very true to his best friends. And so I just told you that he designed this fortification against the Medici, but he also worked for the Medici, especially when they became popes as Leo X and Clement VII. His boyhood friends, young men whom he had actually shared the table with at the Palazzo Medici, were in the highest positions of power in the church, and he balanced that. He was very political in understanding that he wasn't going to be against all Medici if there were patronage opportunities.
Did the head of Leda ever get made into a piece of sculpture?
The head of Leda got made into a beautiful painting of Leda and the swan, but it was made for the Duke of Ferrara, and when the agent came to pick it up, the agent didn't appreciate it. He said, oh, that's not much. And therefore, Michelangelo famously gave it to one of his assistants. You were not to cross Michelangelo if you wanted to get one of his fine works of art.
How seriously did he take his architectural work?
Very seriously. He took his architecture work so seriously that, in fact, he thought of it as the real culmination of his career. And he designed the Dome of St. Peter's. He restructured the major part of the Basilica as we see it today. And he did that entire work with no salary whatsoever as an act of piety.
As I said earlier, many of these pieces have never been shown in the United States before. Are they going back to Italy after this exhibit?
They're going directly back to Italy, to the Casa Buonarroti, where they will be in storage for several years. The rarity of this kind of exhibition is that we see things that even in Italy we wouldn't otherwise see.
And you've also included some other artists.
Yes, we have works that show portraits of Michelangelo that gives us some sense of what he may have physically looked like or what that others imagined him as. But the majority, over 50% of the works, are works directly from the hand of the great master.
And if you would like to see some of the images from the exhibition, we have posted a link to the exhibition's website on our show page at WNYC.org. My great thanks to Gary Radke, who is a scholarly advisor to the exhibit and a professor of fine arts at Syracuse University. The show Michelangelo, the Man and the Myth is at the Palitz Gallery, PALITZ, on East 65th Street, and it runs through January 4th. Thank you so much for being with us today.
You're welcome, Leonard. Thank you.